The Housing and Transportation Committee meeting will begin. It will be recorded. It's Thursday, November 18th, 2021. It's 9:32 a.m. My name is Sandy Stain, and the first business is the Pledge of Allegiance. And I don't know if Denise is on or not.
Yes, she is.
Is she here? Oh, good.
Waving Denise. Her hand.
Mm-hmm. Great. Denise, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure, if you'd all stand, please. Begin after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And then we'll have roll call, Linda Barcelona.
Okay, if you could all unmute yourselves so we can do this quickly. So I'll mark myself here. Elizabeth Busick.
Here.
Helen Cameron, we know, is an excused absent. Amelia Castro.
Here.
Jerry Chang. Is Jerry on?
I didn't see him.
I haven't seen him yet. Okay, Jean Hernandez. Was absent. Juno Kim.
I saw him, but I think
he's there. I see him. I see him. Jeanette Revilla.
Here.
Revilla.
Yeah, thank you. Here.
Yes, sorry. Sandy Sting is present. Amina Sin Matthews.
Present.
Dave Tesla. He's absent. Cynthia Thacker.
Here.
Denise Barnes.
Present.
John Ulrich.
He hasn't
been here. He's still on the list.
Yeah, sorry, you must have a outdated, Linda. We'll get you an updated list, but on my end, he is marked off the list. He's no longer on this committee.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Okay, thank you. It's been suggested, because some people have to leave early, that I'm gonna change the agenda and we're gonna go to number 7 first, which is an action item. AB 361, review and make findings required by government code subsection 54953E3. Recommendation, continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of the emergency arising from COVID-19. Meeting in person presents imminent risk to the health and safety of attendees. And the emergency continues to directly impact the ability of the members to meet safely in person. So I'll need a motion from someone so we can vote on that action item number 7.
So move.
Thank you. So Denise moves, and we need a second.
I'll second.
5 seconds.
Elizabeth seconded. Okay, and then any discussion? So then do we have to take a roll vote?
Yes, we do. And I'll go ahead and take that roll call vote.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Linda Barcelona.
Linda.
Elizabeth Busick.
Yes.
Helen Cameron's not here. Amelia Castro.
Yes.
Jerry Chang is not here. Jean is not here. Juno Kim?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Jeanette Revilla?
Yes.
Thank you. Sandy Stang?
Yes.
Amina Sin Matthews?
Yes.
Dave Tetzma?
He's absent.
No, I saw him. He's there.
Yeah, he just came on.
Oh, okay.
It's a yes.
Thank you, Dave. Cynthia Thacker?
Yes.
And Denise Barnes' motion. So I will put her yes. So motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I just saw on the bottom of the screen, Helen Cameron voted yes also. Okay, so we'll go back to the agenda and we'll go to number four, which is the senior non-emergency medical transportation update by Jeanette.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Let me share my screen so everyone can see the report. Bear with me a moment. And let me know once everyone can see the report and if you need me to enlarge it a little bit. Okay, perfect. Okay, I'll enlarge it a little bit. Okay, so for September, we had a total of 2,612 trips for Area 1. Area 2 had 2,435 trips, and Area 3 had 4,439 trips. The average cost per trip for Area 1 was $50.93. Area 2 had $46.95, and Area 3 had $46.06. The average trip length for Area 1 was 6.04 miles, Area 2 was 8.67 miles, and Area 3 was 5.46 miles. And the average cost per mile for Area 1 was $8.43, Area 2 was $5.41, and Area 3 was $8.44. So that's it for the September stats for the senior non-emergency medical transportation. The trips are going up. I believe they're starting to mobilize for booster shots. That's pretty much it. Does anyone have any questions? Okay. Well, I'm gonna stop sharing my screen. And just please feel free to let me know if anyone has any questions. Thank you.
Andy.
Maybe Sandy lost connection. Would someone like to take over with the agenda? Maybe Elizabeth, since you're SCAC secretary, are you okay with moving on with the agenda?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, now we can hear you.
Oh, you know what? All of a sudden it muted itself. I don't know how that happened, but I didn't touch anything. Oh, okay. So that's why Denise was saying, Sandy, I said, why is she interrupting me? Thank you, Denise. What I was saying was, I'm gonna just go a little bit out of order because we have a visitor and she's considering joining our committee and she has to leave early. So I was gonna ask Charlene Ashendorf if she would just like to talk a little bit, a couple sentences about herself, why she wants to work with seniors or why she wants to be in the Housing and Transportation Committee. She's joined SAC and she has to pick one of the committee subcommittees to be on. So are you okay with that, Charlene?
I am indeed, and thank you, Chair. It's really a pleasure to be here and see these faces. I'm really excited about the appointment to SCAC, having attended a committee meeting the other day and the first meeting on Friday. This runs like a really well-oiled machine, so it's really exciting. And after the first meeting, I got so much information on veterans and I just had to go to the senior center the next day and share it. I mean, on Monday and share it. So, but as far as my interest in housing and transportation, I have been involved with senior issues, especially in Costa Mesa and Newport Beach for pretty much the last 25 years. My work in Orange County has been in housing. I worked on the first housing homeless issues task force. Ms. Cameron might remember those days. with Senator Marion Bergeson in housing and transportation are very near and dear to my heart. So thank you very much for this opportunity to participate today.
Thank you. And we'd really like for you to join our committee because we're the best. Right, Denise? Denise is clapping. Okay. So going back on schedule, next would be our presentation from Senior and Veteran Housing, Grace Scepter. Have we seen her?
She was on, actually, I forwarded her my link because she didn't receive it. So that's why there's two Amelia Castros and Grace is.
I'll rename that one. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay.
Hi, Grace.
Hi, good morning. Pleasure to be here. Happy to participate. So just let me know if I can take it away. I do have a presentation. So if it's possible to share my screen, that might be helpful as well.
Yes, that would be great. Thank you.
Let's see if I can. Share my screen.
Grace, I just confirmed you do have permission to share your screen. If you see the down at the bottom, there should be a green share screen icon.
Got it. Can you all see that now?
Yes, we can see.
Okay, very good. So I'll get started here. Thank you for making the invitation to us at the State of Anaheim to present our programs. Amelia Castro is a commissioner on our Housing Commission, so very familiar with her. And Denise Barnes was recently one of our councilwomen and very supportive of a lot of our senior programs. So very happy to see some familiar faces this morning. So just very quickly, at the City of Anaheim, the department that handles housing and in particular some of our senior, not all of our senior programs, but the ones I'll be covering today, we roll up to the Community and Economic Development Department. Under our department is really the Anaheim Housing Authority. We have a workforce division and we manage a number of grants that in addition to supporting our housing programs also provides some support to some senior programs. We do fund the senior serve and a couple of other of those programs with community development block grant funding. So moving on to the task at hand, I think I was asked to cover today primarily our affordable housing programs. I'm sure that this is not a surprise to anybody on this committee, as I'm sure you're very well versed on the needs for this type of assistance. But I would like to show this slide because I think sometimes there's a misperception of who actually needs affordable housing and why there's such a great demand to produce more. And also we like to put a face on the fact that, there was in the past been perhaps some perceptions that people who need affordable housing maybe are primarily unemployed or not doing something to help themselves. But indeed, that's not the case. Often those who need affordable housing are people who are actually in the workforce or just not making enough to be able to sustain housing because we do happen to be in one of the highest housing cost markets. And our seniors in particularly see that most pronounced because, often they're on limited income, social security, what have you, and the ability to really go out there and work two or three jobs as many families are doing is just limited because, we're now getting to that age where physically it's just a difficult thing to do. Okay, so there are a couple of programs that the Housing Authority has. Probably the most popular, the one that people hear of the most, is the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Program. In the slide, you'll see that within the Housing Choice Voucher Program, there's a couple of boutique programs that are meant for specialized populations. One is VASH, Veterans Affairs Supportive Services, and those are available to veterans. A lot of the regulations around the VASH program are now starting to change. There was a time when you had it was very much linked to your status when you left, your discharge status, but there's a recognition now that there may be circumstances that are other than honorable that still are deserving of the housing choice voucher of the veterans assistance. And so we're starting to see some movement there. No age restriction on the VASH vouchers helps those who are newly out of the military all the way up to those who have served many, many years ago. And that's a program that right now has a lot of openings, not only in Anaheim, but really throughout the county. We have a mainstream voucher, which is primarily for folks that are disabled or are currently exiting homelessness. There is capacity within that program. And then very, very recently, breaking news, as a result of COVID, we were awarded 278 emergency housing vouchers, which are for people who are exiting homelessness or at risk for homelessness. This is a very unique and special funding for us because the program, the tenant-based program, where you could take a voucher and rent anywhere in the community in a housing of your choice, that program has not received new funding allocation of this magnitude for well over a decade. It's also exciting for us because in our most recent point in time counts, Anaheim does not only the county's point in time counts, but our own citywide point in time counts. Our demographics are showing that the population that is growing in homelessness is our senior population. So while it immediately doesn't look like maybe it's a senior resource, given the demographics of what we know from our point in time count, it most certainly is. We do have to work with the county's continuum of care system in identifying those recipients of the Housing Choice Voucher Program. But it's an active process that we're doing right now, working with a number of nonprofits. That's the entry, the gateway into these programs to be attached to services who then refer eligible families or individuals to the continuum of care. And then the continuum of care refers them to housing authorities. The Orange County Housing Authority received vouchers in addition to us, as did Santa Ana. So there's about roughly a little under 1,000 housing choice vouchers available at this point in time in Orange County, which again is good news for us. Not that we have a homeless issue, but that there are resources available. We do administer a regular tenant-based voucher program, which is where people can get on a waiting list. Then we call them, and based on income guidelines, they get a voucher that they could use to rent any place, apartment, condo, what have you, in the community. Unfortunately, the regular program is oversubscribed and the waiting list has been closed for some time. So the way into the tenant-based housing choice voucher program right now is really through one of these boutique programs that I've described, either veterans, the mainstream program, or right now the emergency housing voucher program. The second piece of our rental subsidy programs, which is rental subsidies being where the housing authority actually helps to pay the rent and the participant contributes 30% of their own income towards rent, where so that the rent is more affordable. The second piece to our program is what we call our project-based rental assistance program. Under that component, we attach rental assistance to specific developments. So in that case, while it's a wonderful program, you do have to be willing to move to one of the developments that has this type of assistance offered there. It's an income-based eligibility. Residents pay 30% of their income towards that rent. And those waiting lists actually are currently open. We take applicants on a continuous basis for those programs. So unlike the tenant base where there's the maximum choice that is currently closed, the project-based voucher application is an option at this point. So I wanted to give you a couple of pictures of what our project-based developments look like. I did hear that Helen Cameron is part of your commission. She's with Jamboree Housing, and Jamboree is one of our partners in a lot of the project-based developments that we put forward. All of our project-based developments are quality. They have supportive services on site, amenities, and just a lot of detail to the architects so that they really feel like home. Often, our project-based developments are the best looking development on a block or even sometimes for a couple of miles. The one that we've highlighted today is Buena Esperanza, which is in the first district where Denise Barnes was a representative for us. That was a former Econolodge motel. Looking at it now, you probably could not tell that it is, but it is housing now for chronically homeless or those at risk of homelessness. And it opened in really April, May of this year, and is now almost 100% leased up. The other development here is El Verano, located in our fifth district. It's 53 units, and this is exclusively senior housing. We haven't produced a 100% senior housing in quite some time, so we were really delighted to be able to put this one forward. And as I indicated earlier, our demographics suggest that one of the populations that seems to be growing in homelessness is our seniors. So for El Verano, 50% of the units are reserved for those that are exiting homelessness or at high risk for homelessness, as documented by a nonprofit provider. We believe that it is one of the first of its kind, at least in Orange County, as we haven't really seen developments that are dedicated to homeless seniors, although we know that it is a population that definitely exists. And it's a beautiful development, just like Buena Esperanza, with open space, community service, and a small community garden. To the site a couple of times. All of the supportive services there are senior serving. A lot of fellowship happens there in terms of people just really coming out and learning and being in a positive environment. Very quickly, how do you get on a project-based voucher waiting list? It's online. All of our applications are online. Just highlighted a little bit where that is. I know sometimes our website isn't the most friendly. We're working on that. It's something that we're actively reviewing at all times. A little more of our developments, just for context, in addition to the two that are newly opened, we have some that have been in our pipeline have been part of our portfolio for some time. Miracle Terrace in District 1. Which is the west side of Anaheim, Tyrol Plaza in District 4, which is just is along State College, Balaj Manor here in our District 3, along Broadway and Euclid, I believe, and El Verano, which is our new one. So again, just a sampling of what our project-based developments look like. All of these projects are 100% senior developments and offer rental subsidies, which means that if you go live there, your portion of the rent is 30% of your income, which I think is where our seniors probably need the most help. More on El Verano, just because it's our newest development. We happen to have a lot of pictures and we're very proud of the final product. So moving on from subsidized housing, we also have traditional affordable housing, which is non-subsidized. So in our affordable housing arena, we have a number of projects: Lindbrook Court, Heritage Village, Anaheim Memorial, and Fountain Glen. There are senior affordable housing developments spread out throughout Anaheim. There is at least one in just about every district of Anaheim. Now, the difference between this and our subsidized programs is in that in these buildings, the rent is controlled, but there is no subsidy. So the rents are, in theory, lower than market rate market-based buildings. We do, from time to time, hear that even with these restrictions, rents sometimes are out of reach for some of our seniors, and we certainly understand that. But hope that this at least offers some assistance for those who do have some income that will provide this for this opportunity for them. The housing authority is less involved with these sites in that we are primarily a referral agency. These are all self-monitored in terms of the on-site management actually does income verification and inspections and what have you. The method to get on these, what we keep is what we call an interest list. It's not a waiting list. And so the interest list basically is a place to put your name and be alerted whenever there's an opening. The other way is to actually call these sites themselves and put yourself on their waiting list in order for when they have a site, when they have an opening for them to call. A lot of this is just kind of having to continuously be in contact with the building to make sure that you're aware when there's an opening, because there is high demand for a lot of these properties. But this interest list is also available on our waiting list, and we try to have this information available in multiple languages, English, Spanish, and Vietnamese. And again, understand we always understand this may not be the most user-friendly way to do this, but particularly during COVID, it served us well in that it didn't disrupt business. You could continue to put yourself on lists and we could continue to inform those that were interested in these type of housing opportunities. So next, I will highlight our Senior Safety Net program. Former Councilwoman Denise Barnes was on the dais when we implemented this program, and I think was certainly a champion for this cause. I will take a moment to say that she did constantly raise the issue of having to do more for our seniors, something that I know she cares deeply about, as does Commissioner Amelia Castro, who currently serves on our Housing Authority Board. So the Senior Safety Net is a program that is unique to the city of Anaheim. We actually, when we were formulating the program, we did outreach to a lot of cities and found that with the exception of the city of Santa Monica, there wasn't anything quite like this. But it was something that our council wanted to see put forward and tasked staff with coming up with a creation. And so what we did was cobble together money from different pots. In my intro, I told you we do Section A, but we have a lot of grants also under our program. So we cobbled together all of our resources and came up with the Senior Safety Net program, which provides three layers of assistance. The first is case management. Because first we want to understand what the need is. And sometimes simply connecting people to services, potentially maybe food services, or somebody who could help with chores around the house, what have you, that might be enough for somebody. The second piece of the program is short-term rental assistance. This is truly intended to be emergency assistance. Under that program, we could pay for 3 months of rental assistance. And this is to help with those situations where maybe there was an unforeseen medical situation, a car broke down, or just something that happened that really threw the household off balance. In the short-term rental assistance, we can also help with things like security deposits and moving expenses. This is truly intended to be short bridge type of assistance. And then in the event that that's not enough for some, for the client that we're working with, there is a tenant-based rental assistance component within the Senior Safety Net program that provides a rental subsidy for up to 1 year. This tenant-based rental assistance very much looks like Section 8, but it is funded from another pot of money called the Home Partnership Investment Program that we get from HUD. It's flexible money that we were able to use in this manner. So again, you start with the case management component, which basically assesses what's going on with your situation, how do we best help to stabilize the situation. And so you could either be referred to community services like a Meals on Wheels, if that happens to be the situation. You could be potentially referred to short-term assistance if the case management highlights that this is really a short-lived emergency and a little assistance will get you to stability. Or perhaps the case management consultation reveals that more assistance is needed. For those that are in our tenant-based rental assistance program, we know that oftentimes the need is going to be larger than 1 year, but the 1 year does provide a bridge to other housing opportunities. When somebody is placed in the long-term tenant-based one-year program, we are ensuring that they're getting on all of our project-based waiting lists so that if an opportunity comes up there, we can transition you to a more permanent situation. Or if a voucher comes up, if you're really at risk as homeless and we have some of these emergency vouchers, that we can transition you onto that so that at the end of 1 year, you're not worse off or in the same place where when you first came to us. Recently, with the opening of El Verano, the senior complex, we were able to transition about 10 families who were on the tenant-based rental assistance into that housing situation, which is now long-term stable housing. So the Senior Safety Net program started off as a pilot program. We are now going to be entering our third year. And we think that it provides enough of a resource that we're going to continue to find money to continue to do this. We've actually started with a small part of money and every year have augmented the budget for this program to make sure that it really is being able to be responsive to all who need that. Very quick fact sheet on it. I certainly won't go through all of it, but we do have all of this available on our website. It's a 4-page fact sheet that walks you through what the income eligibility is, what we provide, how to get into the program. For the Senior Safety Net program, while the Community Development Department funds it, our community services staff is actually the front line who is meeting with our seniors and helping to guide them through the process. And consultations for that program are available primarily Mondays on a walk-in basis, but then by appointment on other days. And the number for that program is highlighted in all of our flyers. So I think I was allotted 15 minutes. I may have gone over a little bit with your indulgence, but I'm open to any questions that you may have.
Okay. I don't have any questions, but I just want to thank you, Grace, for sharing the presentation with the group. That's great information. And thanks again.
Yeah, I see a hand up from Denise Barnes. I'm not sure if I'm calling on folks or if the moderator is or how we're doing that.
Yes, it's Denise. I had my hand up, Sandy. I am just so proud of you, Grace. You have been through thick and thin, and it's such a beautiful testimony to the hard work that you do. And thank you, Amelia, for getting Grace. This is a wonderful opportunity for us to see what cities are actually working through the storm and making headway. I have been to most of the openings on the projects that you've done, and I've seen the awards that you've been given, but this is all hard work. All the red tape, all the hills you have to climb to just get an inch or two, and Helen would be the first one to tell you, as trying to partner with the city and all the codes and all the other things, but our input here under housing and transportation, all the many little things that we offer to make seniors more comfortable, hopefully will come to fruition. And I really thank you, Grace. You and your team are just a wonderful team to work with. Very stellar in your quality of work and very thoughtful. Thank you.
Thank you. Very, very appreciate that.
Very good presentation, Grace. Mm-hmm. I did have one question. This is Sandy. During your presentation, you said most of it, the applications were on the computer to apply. What about the homeless or the people that are not computer literate?
So for our homeless population, under one of our grants, the Emergency Solutions Grants, we do fund about 12 agencies who help with all of the application processes and ensure that, you know, people have access to computers, are even willing to walk them through them. And so that is one of the places that we know definitely help is needed. With our seniors, you know, our senior safety net program, which is we do have that's person to person contact that will help to walk through that. That being said, we do know particularly for some segment of our senior population, it's not always the easiest task. Our staff will walk clients through the process. In order to get that, you know, once upon a time, all of our applications were taken by paper, and that had its drawbacks also too, because if you lost that one application, you had no record that anybody had ever applied. So we worked through those challenges, but certainly understand that this is our seniors in particular are one place that that can be enhanced. The one thing that we're growing now, which we're, you know, excited to see the outcomes of, is partnerships with the library. The libraries are very much our champions, both for housing and for our workforce program. They have computers, they have staff there that will walk people through processes. So that's another place to get assistance walking through applications. And in terms of, you know, we're also conscious that we have a very diverse population here in Anaheim. And so Access California is one of our nonprofits that we fund, and they have the capacity for something like 25 languages and have made themselves very available to help people walk through the application process.
Oh, great. Thank you. And then I saw Elizabeth's hand go up. Elizabeth?
Thank you. I in District 5, El Verano, yes. Where is that located?
It is on Lincoln, just past East.
In what city?
And it's in the city of Anaheim. It's on Lincoln and just past East Street.
But I thought you said it's in District 5, El Verano.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anaheim's District 5. Oh, not Orange County's District 5.
I caught that too. And I thought, okay, I must have misunderstood what she said.
Yeah. Sorry about that. When I was referring to districts, I was talking about Anaheim District.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah. Anything else, Elizabeth?
No, I'll take my hand down. Thank you.
Anybody else have any questions? It was a great presentation.
Yeah.
I will highlight one thing that I did forget to say. So if you happen to know seniors who have fallen behind on their rent because of a COVID impact, or they live with a family who's had a COVID impact, we are still offering emergency rental assistance prevention dollars. That came from the federal government to help prevent evictions. That applications are they're ongoing. We're taking them both from landlords and from tenants in order to prevent eviction. So another resource that we have currently available to make sure people stay safely housed.
Great, thank you. And can you make the presentation available to Jenna and she could send it out to us?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions from anyone else? Oh, Linda Barcelona is saying to all panelists, please provide slides if you can. I think that's what I just said.
Yes, I'll forward it to Jenna.
Okay. I really appreciate your taking the time. It was excellent. And I really, the part where you talked about the income levels, I've heard many people make comments about that. And I know how expensive our housing is in, all of California, but Orange County. And I never knew exactly what the amounts were. So the part where you went through the actual dollars was amazing to see that how high it's gone. And I'm not challenging it. It just, it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
You wouldn't think of that as falling into a category of affordable.
Yeah, we're now challenged with some of our own staff that we employ and work full time for us qualify for these, for this housing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So just your opinion, because we have a few minutes. What do you see going forward? Like, what changes do you see coming? Any patterns you see? Anything that can get better? Or is it, or some of the things going to actually get worse?
Well, we certainly always, I'm being the eternal optimist, hoping that things get better. We are, this is an exciting time to be in housing. I would say that both the state and the federal government have unprecedented funding commitments to the production of affordable housing and to providing what we call safety net programs. during COVID, my department actually, we sent unprecedented increases in funding, both from the eviction prevention piece. We've got $47 million to try to keep people in their homes and paid up with their landlords to prevent eviction. So I think that certainly helped quite a bit. We're seeing new funding competitions in terms of coming from the state in terms of a lot of accelerated housing programs. We're watching at the federal level, the Build Back Better program, which is still being debated in Congress. But if that comes on board, it has funding for quite a large number of Section 8 vouchers, which we think definitely are needed, and a bunch of other flexibilities within the program that I think will make these programs a lot easier for us to deploy. Unfortunately, in terms of the situation that got us here, you know, the disparity between cost and incomes, that looks like it's going to continue. I mean, I think we've all experienced when we're going even to the market right now, food's going up, I'm sure medicines are going up, rent is going up. So for us, I think our main goal is to continue to bring hard units online why we're so vested in the project-based development, because we think if we get to a place where there's enough inventory of housing, that may help to bring down some of the costs of rent. But in terms of the need for affordable housing, unfortunately, it's going to be with us for a while.
Okay, great. And then I apologize, Helen Cameron wrote a question. It popped up for a minute and went away. And I'm not that computer savvy. I don't know how to get it back, Helen.
I can read it.
Oh, can you see that? Okay, good.
Here's what Helen Cameron is asking. With the master plan on aging, what do you see how Anaheim can meet the senior housing need?
Great question, and thank you, Helen. I do think that is something that we have been focused on. Again, you know, Councilwoman Barnes, I think one day when we were walking, when Alvarado was first just the groundbreaking, she kind of pulled me over as gently as she does and said, what are we going to do about this? I think that was her question 2 or 3 years ago. And so I in Anaheim, I think our goal as it relates to senior housing is multifold. One is increasing the production of affordable housing in the senior arena. Here today, we have been focused on large housing and obviously the homeless issue. The homeless issue has gotten a lot of attention, but we fear that sometimes, you know, you're all focused on one crisis, and then when that one is somewhat steady, although I'm not sure that, you know, homelessness is continues to be an issue. So is the aging population. And so we have really started to be more strategic about not making sure that our project-based inventory is balanced, which is why El Verano is all seniors. And we have a couple of other developments in our pipeline that we are making sure will have senior housing options. And then we have a couple of buildings that are coming up where their affordability may be expiring. So we're looking to make sure that we are assisting those properties so that they remain affordable for many, many more years. And then the senior safety net program. We really, really are going all in on that so we can build what we hear in the homeless arena, which is a continuum of care. Have a system that meets people where their need is. The needs can vary from something very small, like, you know, in our world, to just connect to services, make that referral, to know I really need permanent supportive housing. So the senior safety net and the senior safety net, rental assistance, and permanent housing are part of the continuum. Our community services department is another player in how we service seniors. They're very, very active in running community senior centers, in connecting to Meals on Wheels. So our department is only one piece of the city's comprehensive services for seniors. I hope that answered the question.
Very good. Anyone else have any questions for Grace? Okay. I think that might be it, Grace. Thank you thank you very much. It was an excellent presentation.
Thank you, my pleasure to be here.
Learned information that you provided, and thank you, Denise, for working with so much in Anaheim. Well appreciated. All right, thank you.
Bye, Grace.
Bye.
And then if we can go back to the screen. There we go. Oh, thank you. Now we got it. Okay. All right, that was very good. Thank you for Amelia for getting that presentation for us. We'll go back to the schedule now, number 6, chair items, new business.
Oh, first of all, I'd like to mention that we have another new SCAC member with us.
Oh, we do?
Do you see Carol Moore? Bottom left-hand corner, now on the left, Carol Moore.
Good morning.
Good morning, Carol.
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
She's here to check us out.
Ooh, check us out. All right. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, Carol? That's what we had the other potential member do.
Yes, I'm a council member of the Mayor Pro Tem for the City of Laguna Woods. And of course, we're a city of seniors. And I'm particularly interested in concerned with seeing more and more seniors finding their money is running out. That's just a really tragic situation that we're seeing. And so I'm very interested in trying to help alleviate that problem.
Great. So how this works is, I guess you have to go to, I don't know if you have to go all, but three of the subcommittees, and then you'd pick the committee you want to be on, if I understand it correctly. Is that the way it goes, Elizabeth?
That's the way I think all of us understand it, and that's why Carol's here.
Good. Well, we're glad to have you and hope you consider joining our group. We're the best. Okay, so thank you for doing that, Elizabeth. The next item is new business and talking about recruiting new members. So Elizabeth pointed out to me that our list of members has dwindled a little bit. So I'm going to ask everybody to commit to next year bringing in one friend, member, potential to join the committee. And I think something I've noticed, we get people that come in and I don't think they know enough about us. And then especially during Zoom meetings, I think they kind of get lost. So whoever you bring in, I would suggest you mentor them during the year so they feel a part of the group and they know what's going on and they have somebody to go to with questions. Any comments about new members, recruiting new members? Okay, then for speakers for 2022, Elizabeth is getting us a speaker for January 13th.
And that speaker is Zeshan, Z-E-S-H-A-A-N, Yunus, Y-O-U-N-U-S, from Anaheim Hills. He spoke to us and we tried to encourage the city council members of Anaheim Hills to approve the Holden senior housing. It was a gorgeous project, gorgeous.
It was.
But it lost in the city council meeting by one vote, I think.
Is that the project, Elizabeth, that was the empty church for 10 years?
It was across the street from the empty church.
Across the street, okay.
Yes, it was absolutely gorgeous. So why in earth would city council members vote it down?
Because they didn't understand because—
No, they understood it very well.
But what could go in there, like Jean pointed out, could be bringing all kinds of traffic and
absolutely
noise, whatever.
They'll never get anything better. So why would these enough city council members vote it down? I think it lost by one vote.
One vote.
That was because if they want to get reelected, they needed to vote it down.
Oh, gotcha.
And so anyway. But Cynthia has a question.
Yes.
I thought that, and not to, you know, say anything about a great, probably another informative speaker, but I thought we were supposed to work on January towards really what we're going to present at the February.
True. So yeah. True.
So well, I thought it was going to be a working one, because when we have a speaker, then we won't have enough time to really toss around good ideas, I thought. So anyway, I just was.
I thought about that, but our group doesn't talk that much. So I don't know if we can spend a whole 2 hours going over our goals for the next year, but that's a possibility. Elizabeth could probably rearrange that if you think that's important.
Well, but it's very important. I mean, we have to be ready for February.
Right. But he's just going to talk about why this failed. And so
it's 10 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think it's a problem, Cindy, because it's like 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And that he's going to, one of our—
That's fine. I just want to get clear. I mean, I just brought it up.
I hear you. One of our goals might be, why do these projects fail? And mm-hmm. So that's why I thought it would be good to have him, because we've been bouncing around what goals should be, and Elizabeth and I, and everyone, not just Elizabeth and I, we came up, that might be one of them. And I thought if he talked for 10 minutes and why he thinks it failed, we could utilize that in our goals. What do you think, Elizabeth?
Hopefully,
do you think we should go ahead with him and give him 10 minutes?
10 minutes, right. No more, right.
Yeah, because he's not going to present the whole project. We already saw that.
He did that, uh-huh. And it failed.
Right.
Okay. And so, we tried to help by writing letters.
Right.
But you have to think about, if you want to get reelected to your city council, you need the support of your constituents.
Right.
And if you're voting against something that they don't want, well, then you're thinking of yourself first.
Right.
But that neighborhood will never get a better project, a better housing thing.
No. So, and as he brought up, the comments they were making, like, you know, the people living there, the seniors, I'll just use the term seniors, we're going to be running around the neighborhood and causing what seniors you've ever seen do that.
Right. It was preposterous.
And then you're going to have less traffic. It'll be less cars because most of the seniors will come without a car. All you have are some deliveries during the week. If you have a store or something, you're going to have way more traffic.
Right. Okay, we don't need to take any more time on this. Okay.
But anyway, unless you think it's wrong, I just thought if he just gave a 10-minute and that might segue into one of our goals.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. Okay.
Cynthia has a very good point. We have to be ready for the February meeting.
Right. So thinking about that, how could we get everyone to prepare something? Oh, Denise has her hand up.
The last speaker, Grace, was expressing about how Buena Esperanza was done for permanent supportive housing. One of the things I'd like to look at promoting for senior housing is whenever it's a two-story facility that we demand or we request an elevator.
Oh, yes.
This is really quite a loophole that was done for that. Because they're older hotels and motels, they don't have that. And to put one in would be another maybe $3,000 to $5,000. But think, the person who is the host of that facility then has to drag the groceries and whatever all else they're doing up to the second floor. And it just seems you would end up jeopardizing a great manager by putting him in that kind of situation. And I'd like, as Elizabeth had talked before, we need to say seniors need a microwave, seniors need this. This would be something that would be definitely great for seniors to have than to march up and downstairs. Yeah, it's great affordable housing, but you know, we need to think about safety and their health long-term.
I completely agree. How about this for our next meeting when we start working on the goals? I don't know if we can put that in there or that can be a part of it, but could you check and see what actual cost would be to put in an elevator? And then you also have the maintenance of the elevator.
Right, right. But that's, I talked to the architect and he said, we thought about it, but because of the cost incurred. But you know what? Disney stepped up and gave $5 million just to complete the project on time. But another couple million or, you know, a couple thousand more dollars wouldn't hurt if they had it in the project.
Right. I know. I completely agree with you. And it should be in there. Anything that has more than one floor should have an elevator.
So I think that maybe we really seriously jot down between now and January what we want to present as something to go. And then we'll have, like Sandy said, we'll all have a discussion about it. But until then, let's seriously think about what we want to put forward as our goals to help for seniors.
So, I'm going to put that on it'll be on the January agenda, but start thinking about it now, writing down your notes. So we do have a productive meeting when we come up with our goals. And under old business, I had put the 2021 goals. So I'm trying to I don't want to say this in a negative way, but I'm trying to figure out how can we handle the goals a little bit better this year. You know, last year, Carolyn spent all kinds of hours preparing the goals. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they came from our group. I don't remember that part, but I'm looking for a way that we manages a little better this year. Like we should be talking about the goals during the year. We should be talking about our success, not our success, but just to write up goals and then just forget about them. I don't see that's being very productive. So I'm open for suggestions and ideas. How can we manage these goals better during the year? Should they be on the agenda? I mean, I don't know. Just to remind us what the goals are. I know I work for one committee and we found we were ignoring our mission statement. So we started putting our mission statement right on the agenda. So that was one thought. So I'm gonna ask the group, Elizabeth, I see you wanna say something, go ahead.
At shared housing. Okay, I sent everybody a thing having to do with shared housing.
Yes, I saw that.
Watch it. And I think shared housing is a winner.
I do too.
When I lived in Santa Cruz, I lived in this elderly lady's house. Oh, it was lovely. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything nicer. And we became close friends. Well, she's dead now because she was She could have been my mother, but what a lovely person. Oh my goodness. So to me, shared housing is a winner. I sent out that thing. All you had to do was, you know, click on the thing and then it would start and it would show you the benefits of shared housing. It was fantastic. I could try to see if I can find it, if I still have it, and send it out once more.
Do that. I still have it, but
one good. Oh, then you, okay, you send it.
You can go ahead and send it out and put a note on it. We're going to discuss it at the January meeting for goals. But good. My question to you would be, should we be that specific and say shared housing, or should we call it alternative housing? That's my only question. And well,
put alternative and under that shared.
Okay, that's a good idea. I like that. Anyone else have any comments on that? Or any other ideas for alternative housing? Denise, sorry.
I think Charlene had her hand up first.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking down, I'm writing. I apologize.
Thank you, Denise. Two things very quickly. Sandy, I have some experience in how to manage goals from other committees, so I would be happy to put something together for you to review and then see how we could share that with the committee if that's workable, if that's helpful to you.
That's a great idea. I'd appreciate that because I wasn't comfortable this okay. year with our goals.
And the second thing, it was very interesting, Elizabeth, when you talked about shared housing. I just got a text because some of our neighbors are up in arms because of the, right this minute, a development of a conversion of a granny unit. How can we possibly have granny units or an ADU and move in an old person in our neighborhood? So this is really an important time to talk about ADUs or granny units or shared housing, because it's a way to solve an issue that we face for our seniors.
And to that note, I'm trying to remember the term that was passed in the state of California. They're going to allow granny units. What are they? Denise, you probably know the word. What am I trying to think of?
Not the ADU. The ADU. That is the term.
No, it wasn't ADU. It was like.
Sure?
Yeah, no, it was housing, not zoning. I'll think of it. As soon as we get off the computer, I'll think of it. But it was about California has been very strict about not allowing granny units and any other thing on your property. And that law just got changed and they are going to be allowing it. I can't think of the term. Maybe that should be part of our goals as well. There's something in there on that. Okay, Denise, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I would like to use Mr. Poynter in bringing forward to this committee anything that is a legislative proposal under housing and transportation so we can get behind it and push that through. I thought that last list that went out that were proposed for this next budget was stellar, and we need to look at those while they're in the hopper and get behind them. And then let us know which ones didn't make it, so we can maybe put more detail or more spin on it so that it really does get put through. I mean, somebody spent a lot of time to get those as a proposal, but we need to back that, and maybe it's just not on our radar.
Oh, that's a good point. So do you think we should have him as a speaker then, or?
See if he can. I know he's a busy guy, but still, he has the paperwork. And I'm sure he has it categorized into different buckets. And if he could hit our bucket, that would be great.
That's a good idea. I like that.
I just want to say that I can send to all of you the top 10 proposals. I'm on the California Senior Legislature, and so is Dave. But I can send you the top 10 proposals. And in January 11th, 12th, and 13th, and we won't be in Sacramento. We'll be doing this on Zoom. We're going to do the walk the halls thing, where we go to the the different legislators' office and try to get them to adopt these proposals. So I don't think we want to wait until our January meeting, because we want, you should get this information now. And then either write to Sandy or me and say what you think should be done. But there are California senior legislators like Dave and me who will be walking the halls on Zoom.
Elizabeth, I think let's direct everyone to communicate with you, since you're on the committee, and I don't mean need to be the middle person, and they can or directly to you or to Dave, right?
Uh-huh.
So that would be my suggestion to the group, is make your comments to Elizabeth or Dave, since they're on the committee, and then it'll go right to that, to the right person.
Okay.
Does that help, Denise?
But I think either Denise or
Charlene. Yeah, we should utilize Elizabeth.
Right.
Yeah, she's on our team.
Sit around and wait till we have our next meeting. Too late.
Right.
Right, and I think also there's some legislation that was already done about transportation. If you don't use your car more than so many miles, your insurance should be already letting you know that you have a refund in the mail. And if not, you need to call your insurance company and have them reevaluate the miles that you put on last year, and they will send you a refund. But it's up to you to be proactive. And I think that should be something that should be discussed, because it only took place because of COVID. Mm-hmm. But a lot of us know that we have stopped driving as much and whatever, and that's just cash sitting there that people are not using. So Carol Moore, you had talked about finding money. There's a lot of good places to start. And I encourage all of us to please be reading AARP magazine if you're not already. A lot of good tips in there to save money too.
Right, there are. My insurance company has already sent me two checks or reduced my rate. I can't remember what it was, and I didn't even contact them.
Same here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did anybody else have their hand up that I missed? Okay, those are all really good points, but I agree with you, Elizabeth. We should work on this right now if you're walking the halls on January 11th. So let's ask everyone on the committee to get in touch with Elizabeth or Dave and make your comments once she sent out the list to everyone. Does that make sense, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can I say something? Yeah. Okay, so I looked it up because I knew it had already passed, but the law, the state of California passed the law first in 2016, and then even loosen the requirements again in 2019 for the ADUs. So those are now allowed. They also reduced the parking requirements for them. And then just in SB 9 was just signed into law, allowing the building of up to 4 dwelling units in single family home neighborhoods. And that was signed into law in September.
Does it say what they called that, the term?
The ADUs were passed, and that's what they were called, ADUs, accessory dwelling units. Oh, okay. And they're also legal. You can convert, add units even to buildings like fourplexes in multifamily dwelling areas. You know, like the fourplex, there's block long housing units that are 4 units per building. If you meet certain requirements, you can convert your carport area into an additional dwelling unit or add another one on top of a dwelling unit. So that the zoning laws have been adjusted to provide for the building of additional units. But this last one actually effectively does away with single family dwelling neighborhoods, or you can't preclude it. Like the granny flat, you can't preclude somebody from doing that anymore.
No, that's what I had read, and I just couldn't remember all the terminology.
Also, your neighbor, if they decide to, can divide their home and create a duplex. Wow. There's no parking requirements anymore for those kind of units. Even in some areas, if there's enough land area, you can have a fourplex that is the single family house next to you can be torn down and a fourplex could be built there.
So most of this before was predicated on parking?
There's always been parking requirements tied to dwelling units, and that's been done away with.
Okay.
But there's zoning laws. There's R1, there used to be R1 zoning areas, R2 zoning areas, R4 was where my apartment building was. Okay. Condos are generally R4 zoning, but.
All right, well, maybe that could be your suggestion when we start talking about goals, that we should be reevaluating the zoning laws if they've changed.
Okay, there's,
you know, we're going to each bring potential goals, and then we'll pick from the group. But I'm just saying, since you researched this might be something good.
I just looked it up. Yeah, it's already done.
No, I know, but I don't know how many people are aware of this is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
I mean, okay. I read the paper still, and a lot of people don't bother with that. And then sometimes I wonder why I do, but then I see things. Okay, Elizabeth, sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm wondering, okay, if we are reevaluating laws that were just passed, the only benefit I can see that we derive from that is just to make ourselves knowledgeable, because the laws were just passed and signed.
Right.
But I can change the laws.
No. But my point was, how many people know about this? That's my point. I would guarantee you most people don't know.
Possibly, but Carol had something to say.
Yeah, Carol's got her hand up. Sorry, Carol.
Yeah, I guess we may have a differing view on this one. SB 9 and 10 are highly opposed because it took away the, and Elizabeth, I guess I'd like to also go back. You spoke of a project and I didn't know where that was, but I'll come back to that in a second. Here's the problem with SB 9 and 10. And I think you mentioned some of those, acknowledging that we need housing, but you can't take and destroy people's neighborhoods. And you may say, well, we need these houses. We just know, wait a minute, people have rights. And just yesterday, let me give you an example. A discussion came up about using trails, and you have the hikers that want to use the trails, and you have bicyclists. Well, neither one is incorrect, but you have a problem when they both want to use them at the same time, and it creates an unsafe situation. But you can't take a side and say, let's get rid of all the bicyclists or all the hikers. No, they each have equal value, and they each have opinions, and you have to acknowledge the two. So that brings me to SB 9 and 10. We need more housing. There's no doubt of that. But you can't. We established CEQA, and we established all these rules because we wanted to maintain and have adequate parking. If you've ever lived in a neighborhood where people have cars and park them wherever they want, it's very annoying, aside from unsafe. And it so happens that the development in which I live, it was never in the CC&Rs that people had to put their cars away. And so people now, someone joked about it, but it's a fact. They have $60,000 cars sitting in their driveway while they have $1,500 worth of total junk in their garage. And so you wind up with these problems. And that's one of the reasons HOAs were one of the reasons they were popular, because there would be rules. You could not park your RV. Maybe it doesn't bother you. I don't want someone's RV next blocking my driveway or making it difficult or whatever. So SB 9 and 10 has a great deal. It is well known, believe me. It not only is it well known, there's actually a proposed initiative being prepared. And because of the fact that it left open the problem of no parking, you can just do anything you want. The ADU, additional dwelling unit, you were correct, that is the term. It's creating a lot of problems in neighborhoods that it's their neighborhood, and that right has been taken from those people who lived in that community to decide for themselves. Just as the bikers and the hikers each have opinions, we don't discard one or the other. And the same thing with SB 9 and 10. So there's a great deal of opposition because of what was mentioned previously. Your neighbor can suddenly add on to their, that affects the value of your home, what they're doing. And that's the whole reason we have zoning. Do we want to have liquor stores next to elementary schools? I certainly don't. And that's a zoning decision. Once you start taking the rights of communities to establish their own zoning, that is a right that is really upsetting people. And so we have to balance that. People need housing, but you create anger when you do it in a fashion that destroys a neighborhood or destroys the rights of the people who make that selection. So I'm going to leave that for a second. You were talking, Elizabeth, earlier, and I just didn't hear it. You were talking about some housing that was across the street from a church. Where was that? I didn't quite
know where that was.
Thank you for listening.
Okay. It was in Anaheim Hills. It was this thing called... where is it? Holden. So if you Google, go to Holden Senior Housing, and you will see this gorgeous place for senior housing. You weren't going to get any subsidizing. This was a for-profit thing, but it was beautiful. You couldn't ask for anything nicer. And the people who are so opposed to it, they're never going to get anything as nice. And all of us who heard this presentation saw it, thought, oh, wow. I mean, why would you be against this? But there were all these nutty ideas that these old guys are going to look up from their second story and peer down into these people's backyards. It was preposterous. But check out Holden Senior Housing in Anaheim Hills. Very nice.
And the other thing, Carol, any comment that came up negative, they addressed. So they even moved some of the things back, some of the buildings. Mm-hmm. They made sure they had their, what you call it, landscaping. So it was everything that they brought up as a negative, those people handled, I thought, very well.
Mm-hmm. And my concern is, I do, there's housing obviously is an issue, but actually, it's not so much additional housing as affordable. Affordable is what I don't see. And this is another concern that somebody buys a house and here's where these things become unfair. And I'm pointing this out in Laguna Beach. Laguna Beach isn't very far from me. And Laguna Beach, as you know, is a tourist area. And so Airbnb became very popular in Laguna Beach. And I haven't used Airbnb, but I know it's very popular. It makes it possible to stay in what might be an expensive area because you can find some housing and get away from the high hotel costs perhaps and prepare your own food even perhaps. Well, what happened, and here's another where it encroaches on people's rights. In a certain neighborhood, and I'm not real sure where it was, the people that live there found that their neighbors were suddenly using Airbnb, and the other people worked. They had to get up in the morning, go to work, and here were parties going on all night long, and they became very annoyed. They weren't happy about this at all. It was an HOA, apparently, because you couldn't do this otherwise, but it was an HOA. So the HOA said, hey, we're going to kill this Airbnb business. And it must have been in their CC&Rs, I guess, because you can't change, if you know anything about HOAs, you can't change CC&Rs without a vote of everyone. So if it says in your CC&Rs, if you know what those are, I don't want to go into that if you know what they are, but they're kind of like the constitution for the HOA. If you know what this in the CC&R originally, if it states rental restrictions, such as no less than 60 days or something, then you have some control. Well, in this case, I guess they did. And the people who are working said, hey, this is it. We're big parties are going on all night. And they're renting also to younger groups. And it was quite a problem, the cars, the whole thing. And so they said, okay, we're going to have a restriction on this. And so they voted. That was stopped. And they stopped it because the Coastal Commission with De Leon, who expanded the rights of the Coastal Commission, said, wait a minute. See, the Coastal Commission, if you recall, which I highly support, the purpose of the original purpose of the Coastal Commission was that that no wealthy person, this is my interpretation, of course, and my wording, can block off the access to the beach. And I feel strongly about that. The beach is there for everyone, and the beach should not be private. That there's only so much coastline, and people should be able to get to the beach and use it. Okay. He reinterpreted that to say, not only did you have a right to access to the beach, but you had a right to access of cheap, lodging. And so they could not, this HOA could not prevent Airbnb, even though they worked and had this problem. No, you don't have any right to that. Well, I felt that was a wild expansion of right, because I do support the one, but I didn't quite see the other one. And I think we go back to that with SB 9 and 10, that these are the concerns with SB 9 and 10, that yes, affordable housing, good grief, we know that's out there, but it's affordable. And what's really annoying about all this is that the developers, and I'm going to sound critical of developers here because I feel like they're responsible. Affordable is not profitable. If you want to build housing, you build housing for a higher element. There's where the money is, the margins on the sale of each unit. And so there's no incentive, little incentive, whenever developers build the affordable units, number of affordable units in there is totally lacking. It's not there. And that's really the problem. And I personally do not believe that developers are going to be the people that are going to provide the housing. And I think, Elizabeth, what you alluded to earlier or mentioned earlier about the housing that you were speaking of, I doubt that was a developer. You're seeing, if you want affordable housing, you're going to have to get it from the groups such as the person who spoke previously. Those are the groups that will understand affordable. And affordable means that people who are running out of money have access to housing. There's my speech for the day. Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you. All right, anybody else? Anything on that topic? Okay, number 8 is announcements and roundtable discussion. So you want to start first, Elizabeth? Do you have any announcements or any comments?
I think we all have our homework cut out for us. That's my announcement.
Okay, great. I think
if you really care about this committee, you will give it some thought and write things down so that when we meet on January 13th, we all come prepared.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
Linda Barcelona, do you have anything?
No. I'd love to talk to Carol offline sometime, though.
Okay, great.
I was trying to find her on the thing here.
Well, she's a potential member, so she's.
I know she is.
So yeah. She's not on the list.
She'd be perfect, perfect.
But I'm pretty sure she's going to join us because she sounds kind of interested. Denise.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to run out for a minute or two, but STRs are the biggest problem in Anaheim. We were the first to push for it. And then we didn't have all our rules and regulations knowing what was going to be the outcome. And then the worst part about it is that we were competing with hotels and motels, which is, that's their livelihood. And now we're letting, small communities take that kind of responsibility. And we found out that in the bigger picture, our schools were suffering because the children, where's the children? We had tourists And so some of the schools were then debating, well, do we close? Do we keep it open? So you're really, you're going to end up with a mixed bag. It's not a win-win. Mm-hmm. You have to really look at the guidelines and the codes and what really works in that community. That should be another talking point for our discussion as far as housing, because that eliminates that percentage of housing in your neighborhoods. So I think the state has, as from what I've seen in the last 2 years, they're legislating like crazy. You know, you convert your garage, you can convert like anything, put a shed in the back and it's another home. And is that what we really want in our communities? I think we should look at the churches that are converting and tearing down property, even their old churches, and redeveloping with small housing on their property, 6 to 8 units, and it works for them. It's income. And then also they have a new facility, and because they have equity in the property. And we know a lot of churches that have been in those areas for more than 50, 60 years. So we know they're still not paying a lot on a mortgage or whatever. That's what I've seen in our city. Many churches have turned over to that. That's a good conversation. Mm-hmm. So I think we have enough meat to chew on. We just need to get our heads together, but then be sure to, you know, reach out to your seniors and see what else we can do for them, because housing is huge, transportation is huge. Maybe we should look at legislating more golf carts than huge, huge, you know, cars. I don't know, but it is happening, and there's a lot of discussion that we could talk about.
Good Thank point, you. Denise, because everything we've been talking about is housing, so don't we have to remember transportation too? Good point.
I think in Carroll City, Laguna Woods, I think, Sherry Horn, the current mayor, and Carol's coming up to be the next mayor. I think Sherry got something passed where these people in that city can use golf carts.
I think they have all along. They can drive them to the grocery store and everything.
So yeah, I don't know that they can. But we have something else. I'm a big proponent for our community. I'm not speaking of other communities, but transportation is a really big one. And I heard someone say talking about using your car and driving it only a few miles. Frankly, I find that now, and I bet you do too. These Zoom meetings are so wonderful because you can attend several meetings in the same day, not have to even leave your home. I love it. Mm-hmm. Okay, back to the transportation. I'm really glad you brought that one up, because I feel that I would like to see, I know we have the taxi vouchers, but I'll tell you what happened with that. In our instance, and looking at the taxi driver's point of view, I try to be as objective as I can. The taxi drivers are not millionaires. They're trying to make a living too. But the taxi drivers, with a taxi voucher, it was a reduced fee. And so what we were finding is people were using our taxi vouchers. And is there anyone who, I don't think I need to explain that one, unless you get it, what a taxi voucher was. Anyway, it was reduced. But it was great for the person that needed to go to the, you know, to the physician or medical appointment of some sort. Then what we found was the taxis wouldn't show up. They get a better fee, and so they stopped. They were undependable. Well, you can't have that. If somebody has an appointment, now there's no taxi. This is a complicated one, I know, and it may be controversial, but I like the Uber vouchers, that you can arrange your own transportation and you handle it that way. And the reason I like that is now it gives you the freedom to set yours. You don't have to get on a bus. To me, a bus is probably the least likely transportation I would use, because it may not go near where I want to go. I can't decide the time. I have to fit my timing to that exact time, schedule that they have. So in our community, we're doing a study and leading to, we do use our golf carts. You are correct on that, but we have an issue, and that is the charging of the golf carts, because when our community was constructed, we now have competition between people wanting to charge their electric cars and people wanting to charge their golf carts. And we don't have the infrastructure to really handle all this. It's all happening kind of faster than this, than the system set up to be. I think this will work itself out, but in the meantime, it's going to be a lot of hiccups and big ones. But one thing that I would like to see in our community, would totally appropriate for our community, would be the autonomous vehicles, because if there were one coming in my neighborhood regularly, I could use that to go to a clubhouse. I could use that possibly to go to the markets that are close by. So transportation is a big one. And I'd really like to see us think differently about needing cars. Someone brought that up. We need to get rid of cars and reduce the car trips and think of ways, how can we do that? Is it using Uber? My mind is open on all of this, but that's a good one. It's a great topic.
That's a very good point.
I have something to add though.
What's
it's
that?
It's a great topic, but transportation got left off of the master plan for aging.
Oh, like, is that correct? Wow.
What happened? So if you, and we're supposed to be going by the master plan for aging. So, I mean, we can still talk about it, but we can't emphasize it that much because it's not on the MPA, master plan for aging. That's
but oh, I tell you, OCTA wants to work. That's the Orange County. They're really interested in, when you look and see, here's where you, I'm sure you see it. It makes sense for a bus in like on Harbor going up and down, where you have a group in the morning and a certain income level going to specific, you know, general, maybe to Disneyland. Let's put it, use that one, because that's a pretty straight shot. However, it doesn't make sense to see a great big bus using all kinds of, you know, there's where the problem comes. So how do we tackle that? I don't have the best answer, but I think that's a great one to look at.
Yeah, very good. Okay. I don't have my call sheet in front of me. I see Juno's on here and Amina. Juno, do you have anything? You're muted.
How about now? Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. Do you have anything for announcement or comments?
Yeah, I'd like to say something. You know, as you know, these housing and transportation is complicated and politics involved. It's very difficult situations. But the recently, it is happening for me. I've been, you know, helping seniors in urban area for 5-6 years. Nowadays, the urban is so popular, the place to live, because it's a safety, educations, and clean, all that. Everybody wants to move into urban area. So I'm getting a, you know, phone call and consultation. Is that really annoying me a lot, is that the persons from overseas or out of state wants to come, definitely who is not qualified to be in low income housings, but they wanted to move into urban area, and they were consulting me with what is the best way to make it fit. See, did you get that? How to make the documents so that it will satisfy, so that they can come coming into the low income housing. I cannot be nasty to the person like that, but I have to be cooperative and nice too. But I want to avoid and prevent that happening. You know, we have to supply the housings to needy seniors, but the situation is, so it is complicated. There's a lot of difficulties associated with the senior housing. That's all.
Okay, it's a good point, but I think they have to be, I think they have to live here before they can apply, don't they?
But the thing is, the what I'm getting is, because I've been doing it so long, I'm becoming more like a realtor, realtor of a senior housing and affordable housing. you know, and then yeah, that irritates me.
I don't know what to tell you on that one.
So,
committing fraud is against the law. That's what I would tell them.
But the thing is this, you know, the seniors, I picture this. I went to school in Wisconsin, Illinois area. And there's a, when I picture the seniors who needs help, it's the one they who were born in the United States and they worked there all their lives in to make a living. But now the people from overseas, they're not even as citizens, and they're applying for the income. Well, anyway, I have to be polite and just to perform my services, nonprofit services. So I'm going to have some things that I have to do it with my own judgment, I guess.
I think so. Okay, Amina, did you have anything?
I just want to make a couple of comments. I'm really glad that I'm sitting on this committee and learning so much about housing and transportation amongst the older adult here in Orange County. I also sit on the Be Well Older Adult group. And what was really concerning to me yesterday in the meeting was one of the case manager talking about her participants. These were all seniors. About, she said this year alone, about 10 of them are being evicted from their homes. And she's trying to find housing for these seniors and how hard it is for her to find these housing through, you know, whatever resources here in Orange County. So this is a very huge need, like housing and transportation, absolutely. And, you know, just finding ways and resources. What are the resources now? What for the seniors that are going through these issues now? You know, it's great that the developments are, you know, developing homes. And I agree with a lot of you, the developments are sometimes not affordable for a lot of our seniors. So what are some of the resources that we can give to the seniors now that are going through these issues? So that's what I'm hoping to find and work out and, you know, do what we can. I guess that's why I'm in this committee, just to kind of figure out ways to help our seniors now.
Okay, thank you very much. Good comments. Amelia, did you have anything?
I do. Something that we may want to think about is, you know, we're all seeing the gas prices increase and how that's going to impact our seniors that are on fixed incomes that still drive themselves to the doctors and to the grocery store. That's just something to, you know, keep in the back of our mind that's another area that they may need help in. And I don't know if we can do, I know there's like the taxi vouchers and there's Uber and all of that, or if we can do perhaps like gas cards or something, I don't know.
Okay, good points. All good points. Did I miss anybody? I don't have my roster in front of me. Okay. The next one would be public comments. Any comments from the public? Okay. From Carol Moore to everyone, thanks. I too must leave. Okay. So our next meeting will be January 13th. It says on here 2021, but it should be 2022, 9:30. And everyone come prepared with your goals, your ideas, comments. And as a reminder, I'm asking everyone to bring in a member for next year so we can fill up our committee.
and then mentor the person that you bring in so they don't feel lost. Anything else that I missed?
Sandy, this is Jenna. I just do want to put it on your radar. I believe you mentioned that we'll be dark in December, but we will have to call a special for that AB 361 requirement.
It'll just be
the one action item to continue the virtual meeting, but the legislation does require us to vote within every 30 days. So Desiree is working on establishing that. It'll be one morning that we probably, that the goal is one morning to call all committees and the full SCAC in December to carry on the virtual meeting selection. So just do want to put that in on your radar that we will have to call that special in December.
Oh, thank you for reminding us. That's very good. Yeah, so I think everyone got that. And anything else that I might have missed or any other comments? All right, so then we're going to have a wonderful holiday with your family or whomever. And thank you for everything you do for the seniors. I think this is a great committee and I can see we're making some good progress. And next year will be great also. So thank you. And we'll have our special meeting in December. And I'm sure you'll get a notice from everyone. And once again, it's just reading that statement and then voting. All right, so we'll dismiss at 11:13. Thank you all very much for participating.